you were talking about the primitive caveman and the subhuman species and stuff. And I was just really curious about them. Where did they get their knowledge? They always had some religion.
Who?
All the cavemen. They always seemed to have all these subhumans. They always had some religion. Where would they go if they could kill their religious... I think who gave them that knowledge?
Well, everyone, if you said, there are 400,000 kinds of things that species that pass as human beings. So some of them are aborigines. It's not that the so-called caveman, they didn't exist, that there was only, that there was at some time only a primitive man. That primitive man still exists in Australia, in Africa, in jungles, in South America. There are people who live very, very primitive, or people who live in caves even. But we don't accept that there was, you know, a man who was, that there were no other men at a certain time except the Cro-Magnon man or the Piltown man or this or that. So as far as primitive men are concerned, they have some religion and they go to the place where that religion leads them to. Prabhupada says that the religion is always there in man. He said even in the primitive aborigine, when there's lightning, he takes it, well, this must be God. All of a sudden from the sky there's thunder and lightning. So that's his idea of God. It depends on how you worship and what the motive nature is. You take another body. Yanti Deva, Pita Devan, Pitchan Yanti Pitir Vita. They go to different planets. That's not just something in the past, it's still going on. So what's growing here? Corn?
Cow corn.
What is that?
Cow corn in the back.
Cow corn in the back and potatoes
in the middle.
What kind of corn?
Cow
corn.
You call it cow corn? Well, all the corn is cow corn, isn't it?
We have some human corn.
Milk. Very little, though.
Yeah, that's sweeter.
Yeah.
Sweeter. Tender.
Corn. And what's this?
Hari.
Sweet.
And?
We'll probably harvest this today or tomorrow. So
this wheat?
We're harvesting off the edge. We have plenty of eggs. These are the potatoes.
How much more has been being done with oxen?
In the work in the fields?
Yeah.
Well, right now, there's not much for them to do. We're not doing much in the fields.
But this, like this wheat, you're going to do that with the oxen?
No, that'll probably be the last farm work. Farm around is going to do that. Too much to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's really hard. I'll probably do the last thing that we're doing. But then they'll be cutting hay in another week.
This is squash, these flowers?
Yeah, it's squash. And in between them there's melons.
Yeah.
The ones that are branching out and spreading out, those are watermelons and cantaloupe. Yeah.
Gee, the corn is so neat. Yeah,
this
growing so nice.
This is the corn that we're going to get for the devotees. This little field right here.
Yeah. Who's working there, you?
Yeah.
There's not a weed in sight. There's a few.
That's Kubana's mercy.
It's very sturdy. And what's next?
Well, this is cucumbers right down in here. This one row down here. And these are the strawberries. They're all done.
It's finished.
Yeah. And then back there is the cauliflower, but they're just about finished too. There's just a few plants left. And then next to that is broccoli.
Is anything coming up right now that's being taken by the devotees?
Peas. We had a lot of peas. We just got finished.
A real luxury, peas.
Yeah, they're nice. And we're harvesting some squash and cauliflower and broccoli. That's about it right now. Cabbage. Cabbage as well. And spinach. The spinach is all done there.
Balaram brought me a big bag of nice produce in Philadelphia. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And lots of flowers. All the flowers on the deities are all coming from the garden. Mm.
What are those flowers called that I was given on the Vyasasan? All those little ones that I threw?
Stocks.
Yeah. Most of the animals are out in the field. They're not in the barn.
Yes, the cows are. Looking cows are out.
Then I won't go by. I got to see them. I left at the perfect time last night. With their bells. Walking along.
One of the milkers is going to Monticello to Pandrika.
Hmm. A real good cow, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Huh. She's one of our best right now. She's giving way over 10 grand.
Where's Matsya Rupa?
Thank you.
You're going to take care of her?
Very good care.
Hmm. There's a, Prabhupada said, there's a mundane calculation that the man advises. But if you're going to give in charity, then give a blind cow. that they give in charity because they feel you're supposed to give charity sometimes and be known as a charitable man. Or you're in some position where you can't refuse, but then give something not good. But you're not getting a bad charity, you're getting good Chandrika. And how will she continue to give milk if she's all alone?
Well, she won't be alone.
Training up an ox.
What's going on down here? This work?
Yeah, we Paranana started to make a quarry right back there.
A what?
A quarry, a rock quarry, so that we'll be able to have slate to make our own roads.
Oh.
So we won't have to buy it anymore. There's a real good...
How do you do that? Just by digging deep?
Yeah.
We've built... There's rock underneath?
Mm-hmm. A whole hill of shale. It's real nice.
Wow.
And we put in the bridge up over there.
Have you got anything out of it yet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Started fixing the roads yesterday.
Taking from nature.
The man we were buying it from went out of business, and it would have been expensive to get it.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Some new person? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. These are going wild. So coming back, I rose early this morning and started a writing schedule. So I was very eager after traveling to start writing. What I'm trying to do is actually, in this Gita Nagari is for me such a favorable atmosphere for writing. I'm trying to start my old writing schedule of rising 12:30 or 1 and writing at that time and then writing sometime later. and make it such a firm thing that even when I travel I can do it, because I can't really stop traveling. So anyway, it's just like this thing, like the flowers and things grow so well here in the ground. My writing started right off as soon as I came back. So I have something that's already been typed up from this morning. So a short episode of that can be put into Prabhupada Leela. Of a very unusual few days Prabhupada spent. No? We don't have it? Or we can find it?
It's not readily available.
All right.
In time. Maybe for tomorrow.
Okay. Oh, I need a pen. Okay, so I see some. I have a pen. In agreeing to go to Zurich, Switzerland, at the request of his disciple, Shyam Sundar Das, who wanted to sell rubies and speculate on the gold market there, Srila Prabhupada appeared to be very lenient. Yet, once he actually went to Switzerland, he showed himself very strict in dealing with the speculation of his disciples. It was April 1973. Srila Prabhupada was staying in Bombay, engaged, of course, in preaching Krishna consciousness and writing the verses and purports to Srimad Bhagavatam. He was also pursuing the long, drawn-out case to secure purchase of the land at Juhu Beach. It was a time when he was mostly... It was a time in his life when he was mostly in India, but frequently traveling on tours of Western cities. The Krishna consciousness movement was growing rapidly under Srila Prabhupada's direct supervision as he visited and inspired the devotees in ISKCON centers around the world. Shyam Sundar Das, who had been his secretary for 2 years, was now attempting to do big in business. When he was with Srila Prabhupada in Hyderabad, Shyam Sundar had met some men involved in ruby mining there who had persuaded him to buy shares in a mine. Shyam Sundar had become busy in digging up rough corundum, which he would bring back to the West and sift through, looking for sellable, clear rubies. When Srila Prabhupada was asked what he thought of Shyam Sundar's new business, Prabhupada replied that if he wanted to do it, let him do it. Shyam Sundar had rendered Srila Prabhupada significant service in England and as his secretary, and Srila Prabhupada, as Krishna's representative, was grateful. But he did not seem much impressed or interested in the mining prospects. In April 1973, Shyam Sundar was carrying about 90 kilos of rough corundum, and on the way to Zurich tried to sell it. To work on that later. He visited Srila Prabhupada in Bombay and invited him to come, since Prabhupada was about to make another swing to the West. When Srila Prabhupada expressed that he would like to rest for a couple of weeks out of the action of managing and visiting temples, Shyam Sundar described a perfect 2-week stay Prabhupada could make at St. Moritz, the famous ski resort in southern Switzerland. He said it was off-season and tourists would not be there. The clean mountain air would be very healthy and pleasing for a restful stop. He even showed Srila Prabhupada postcards of mountainsides covered with wild flowers. Srila Prabhupada agreed. But when they arrived in Switzerland, it was as cold as winter. They took a luxury train that went up the mountains, curving and circling along the mountain paths. Srila Prabhupada's servant, Suti Kirti, watched out the window and remarked at the beauty of the snow and mountain peaks. Everywhere was snow. Srila Prabhupada was silent, but finally asked, "What do they call this place?" Suti Kirti replied, "St. Moritz, Srila Prabhupada." "They may call it St. Moritz," said Srila Prabhupada, "but I call it St. Hellish." He then pointed out that the beautiful snowscape was lifeless. He did not like seeing, quote, simply branches of trees and snow, unquote. It was like emptiness without variety. Where were the advertised wildflowers and green hills and nice climate? It was as if Srila Prabhupada had somehow been tricked by a pretense to come to a very cold, winter-like mountaintop, a place useless for his purposes. St. Helish. Prabhupada wrote a letter to Giriraj, who was in Bombay, tropical Bombay, Juhu Beach, a truly important place where Srila Prabhupada's thoughts and desires returned. Red letter said, "We have reached Zurich yesterday morning and have come to the health resort of St. Moritz. The apartment is very nice, but it is so cold that we cannot go outside. Probably we shall go to L.A. via New York on the 5th of April." There was no question in Srila Prabhupada's mind of staying for 2 weeks at St. Moritz. He would get out as soon as possible. The rooms they had rented were modern European, with thick quilted blankets on the beds. No sooner had they arrived when it began to snow, although it was not supposed to at this time of year. With ironic disgust, Prabhupada remarked, "I have come to Switzerland to stay in the snow." Shruti Kirti discovered that he could find no dal or rice for Srila Prabhupada. All he could find was farina. Prabhupada said he would show him how to make a farina chapati, but when Shruti Kirti tried, it didn't turn out well. Prabhupada was not pleased that Shyam Sundar had brought him here. He asked him to make arrangements to immediately get them out of St. Helish. Meanwhile, Shyam Sundar had invited two of his godbrothers to join them. His plan was that he and Bali Mardan of New York would invest some of their money in gold. Shyam Sundar had information that the price of gold was rising. So, they would buy gold one day and sell it the next, and thus make a big profit. For this purpose, Bali Mardan arrived, although the plan was not Prabhupada's idea. When Srila Prabhupada heard that Bhagavan Das was in nearby France preaching, Prabhupada asked to see him. Bhagavan received Prabhupada's message by phone, and before coming he had the devotees prepare a big feast, which they packed up to take to Prabhupada in St. Moritz. When Bhagavan arrived, it was evening, and Prabhupada was just about to take rest, sitting on his bed. He was very pleased to see Bhagavan, and especially when Bhagavan said, "Srila Prabhupada, I brought a nice feast of prasadam." Prabhupada left his bed and agreed to take the prasadam. One by one, he tasted all the cooked preparations and distributed the remnants. See, when a pure devotee, even if he goes to the snowy mountaintop, Krishna sends him some nice prasadam. By late that same night, after midnight, Srila Prabhupada came out of his room into the room where the devotees were sleeping. He moved Bali Mardan with his foot and told him to wake up. Prabhupada said he wanted to see everyone. They rose and followed Srila Prabhupada into his room. Everyone could see that he was in a grave mood. He became stern, reproaching Bali Mardan and Shyam Sundar for risking so much money in gold speculation. The money Bali Mardan had brought was intended for use in buying a building for New York, ISKCON New York, and Shyam Sundar's money was also for purchasing a building in England. It was not right to risk Krishna's money in this way, Srila Prabhupada said. Shyam Sundar and Bali Mardan both spoke up confidently, trying to inform Srila Prabhupada that it was actually a secure investment. Prabhupada cut them off, saying, "If you try to speak in this way, then how will I be able to teach you anything?" And thus, Srila Prabhupada stopped the gold scam. Although it may have appeared that Prabhupada was misled into coming to St. Moritz at the wrong time, he now revealed that he had suffered all the inconvenience just to stop the financial speculations and concoctions of two of his followers. A pure devotee's time is never wasted, nor is he ever really misled. Staying up almost all night, Prabhupada lectured to them in his room. While it was true that anything could be used in the service of Krishna, Prabhupada admonished them that this market speculation was actually gambling and should not be indulged in. Submitting like young boys, his followers agreed to return the money to the proper ISKCON accounts and not to again speculate as if they were high financiers in the international market. The next day, it continued snowing. It was so cold that Srila Prabhupada could not leave his room. He looked out the window and remarked, "It is a white hell only." Finally, their tickets came through and Srila Prabhupada left for New York. I like that it came out, a very instructive little episode. That kind of thing that devotees can have on record and refer to, how Prabhupada dealt with such a particular thing. Could I have Dr. Allen, that green thing on the top, right? Anything you'd like me to discuss? Okay.
I was very nervous in notes I had, and I read that desire to enjoy the material world is a smile in the face of the universal form. Could you explain that?
Well, that probably came from the Bhagavatam. I forget the exact context, but there are different ways to understand it. I think in some place the smile is compared to Maya, or Maya is an attractive feature of Krishna. I don't want to say right now. I'd rather see before me the where I got it in the Bhagavatam. You can find it for me in somewhere in the second canto. It says, and his smile is, somebody remember? I don't think you'll be able to find it unless you know where it is.
They have that argument that when you come to the human form of life, that you can't fall back down again. And if we say that you can't fall back down, and it's really a useless thing because you don't really learn a lesson anyway, then isn't it a little bit cruel that happens? Because if it's a useless thing, once you've made the human life, wouldn't it be more merciful if God definitely gave you help that you can get out?
Well, he does give you help. Well, he does give you help. That's what I was explaining, the Shastra and the pure devotees, and Krishna consciousness movement. But he's so merciful that if you don't want it, then you can go down, if that's what you want. That's very lenient. That's an extreme kind of leniency or mercy. To leniently allow the son to do what he wants. For the father, he has a nice estate, and there's all opportunity for the son to enjoy. But the son has a wild, independent streak and says, "No, I want to go live in the city, even if I suffer." So the father says, "No, you may think it's nice, but when you have no money and you get bad association, your life will be threatened. Don't go." And the son says, "No, I want to go. I want the experience." And the father says, "All right, but you have to take the consequences of your going. But if you like, what can I do? You're independent. But just know that when you're through with this nonsense suffering, you come back, your place is here. You return to your sanity." So that's the Father's mercy. And Krishna's mercy is like that. That I give you this human form of life, then he does tell you how to use it. But if you say, "No, I don't care for the Shastra. I don't think there's another life. I'll do whatever I like. I'll kill if I like." Then it's not cruel. You're cruel to kill. You're cruel to make violence, disobey God. So there's law. There's justice. And you have to face the action. Krishna doesn't want you to, but you qualify for that.
It seems that the son, when he goes away, and the father says, go ahead and try it, then he'll learn by that suffering. But if when you go down again, there's no learning, then what's the purpose? Is the purpose just the leaves?
Well, you'll come back, but you have to pay a price. In a sense, material nature is cruel. A dog-eat-dog existence. But Krishna, he doesn't... it's not his cruelty. It's your own. It's your own misuse. It's the cruel material nature. Like the father, he's not cruel, but he lets the son go, and the son gets in the hands of the prostitute, in the hands of the criminal, in the hands of the immoralist. They're cruel. They become degraded themselves by bad association, and they become cruel, demoniac, and so they make the son suffer. But what could the father do? The son insisted on going there. The animal species is like that. We're given full warning. And that actually there are, as Prabhupada said, as you associate with the different modes, you get a body like that, and someone may actually want to. He uses the human form of life. He's so degraded that he's always eating flesh and blood, indicating that he considers that wonderful. So he gets a body where he can actually do that. Although we say the animal is horrible, they think it's a good opportunity to be to be more powerful than a human, to be like a tiger. You want to fly, you want to eat flesh, you want to have a lot of sex, you want to have a powerful body, you want to live hundreds and hundreds of years. Yes?
You're saying how that, you know, once they go into the species, it's sort of, they have to stay the terms, but it seems like by the mercy of the devotee, even an animal, if they get shot or something like that, they actually play.
That's
is that due to the mercy of the devotee, or is that due to some past activity or some desire that they had in the human?
Well, this is the mercy of the devotee and the power of the prasadam. The power of the holy name. That even though you're not doing so well, you're on the downgrade in your historical progress. You're suddenly picked up. Brahmande Bharate Brahmande Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Somehow or other, you're just taken out of your downward course. That's the mercy of the Guru and Krishna. We can't study with our psychology or our idea of mercy or justice. You can try to understand God's justice, and then you try to understand it. That poem by Milton, Paradise Lost, he said the theme of this poem is to explain the ways of God to men. So the devotee, he tries to explain the ways of God to men. They're not exactly man's ways sometimes, but it's God's ways, and it's supremely good. God's justice, it may not be exactly like the ACLU lawyer or something, the way he looks at things, but you have to try to understand. Don't argue and make a case that, well, if he did this, then how can he be good? But it's he's all good. And we take shelter in his way, and we become saved from all kinds of suffering. Yes.
Well, we think of Krishna as all good, but then and we think of everything resting in in Krishna, but then there's bad. So how's the bad in Krishna?
There's no bad in Krishna, but everything has to come from Krishna. Like this, from this, everything comes. The darkness comes from the sun. But in the sun, there's no darkness. But darkness is a byproduct of the sun. By shade, if you put like from the sun, the water is evaporated and forms a cloud, and then the cloud creates darkness. So it comes from the sun. Also, but because it's a transformed energy of God. It is not this. It doesn't exist in God actually. As darkness, but the darkness comes from Krishna. That's the whole material energy is like that. It's different than Krishna, but it comes from Krishna, because everything has to come from Him. And therefore, it has some purpose in Krishna's plan. Like the sun's business is to illuminate and heat, and yet the cloud does just the opposite. But the cloud is a product of the sun, because in the plan of nature, that should be there too. There should be sun and heat, but there should also be water accumulated in the clouds and thrown down on the earth. So in God's plan, but when that's done, it's not done by the sun itself. So similarly, Krishna, within Krishna's creation, there's a need for a prison house, because some living entities are going to misuse their independence and they have to go there. But Krishna himself is not going to tend to that prison house. Well, that's done by Durga. So bad is not in Krishna. Everything is good in Krishna. A devotee, he sees that everything is right, that whatever is happening by somehow by Krishna's arrangement. By transmigration, by karma, by misuse of free will. In this way, he understands. So you should not be bewildered. It's like the Christian philosophy, it really has no way to explain these things. How can they explain how a little child is born blind? They say, well, we don't know these things. We don't know how these things happen. But we understand that by past activities, when you misuse your free will and cause suffering to others, then you have to become purified of that. And that's you have to then suffer a reaction, and then you become free of it. Now, if you want to, then you press the point, you don't want any such justice. You want evil to be rewarded. You want there to be no difference between evil and good, between being a demon and a devotee, that everyone gets the same. No, Krishna's waiting for us to not be demon, but to turn to be devotee, to right our wrongs, and to surrender to Him. And those who disturb the devotees, who disturb the peace, they get a reaction. Just like in the Krishna conscious state, the Chechi is there, and he's not a pacifist. He acts to curb down miscreants and thieves within a state or between country to country. So he has to kill sometimes. He has to kill the killer. And that's just. Or an individual, if somebody goes to kill him, he can kill him. And that's not wrong. So similarly, Krishna is in that position also. Through his material nature. Don't do that. He awards rewards and punishments with some distinction. If somebody is a great killer, then he gets killed by time. But then when it's paid out, then he can come back again to the human form of life. So you have to accept that as God's justice. And not try to say that you know a better justice. And actually it is. It is just. And at any time you can get out by surrendering to Krishna. Sarvadharmam paryajanam amekam saranam braja. Stop your bad activities. Stop your so-called good activities. Surrender to Krishna and then all will be forgiven. So he's very merciful in every way. These questions seem to be centering on, well, why is there a chance just in the human life that if you miss a human life, it seems like you have to be away for so long? Well, just take it, not theoretically, but practically, that you, yes, the other species of life are not very important, and this is important, so use it. Therefore, you don't have to become caught up again in that entanglement of lower species. So did Narayan Kavacha come here and present the BTG program? It was supposed to be done by your contacts, but without having to go out. Of course, devotee doesn't have as many contacts as a karmi, as among the non-devotees. So, what were the results?
Bhaktivedanta got 10 subscribers. I was going into town.
That's a lot. Everybody, what did he ask? Everyone to write letters and make some phone calls?
Contact parents and relatives and friends. Anybody who's there. Business contact.
Should do that. Do you have cards? Subscription cards?
No, I have some. He had a real nice class too.
Good. Yeah, we're organizing the whole zone. We're making a zonal Sankirtan newsletter. And also making challenges to other zones to try to expand the BTG subscription. Yes?
I challenged to limit from us. Is that going to mean like an individual distributor?
Yeah, that's what I proposed. We can see what happens. And then, in a few days, we're going to have a zonal meeting on the 7th. And that'll be the last meeting we